Yeah.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Kevin Miller. This is the What Drives You podcast, where we focus on your drive. Your drive is working in some areas of your life, producing great success, yet in other areas, maybe not so much. Let's get clarity on what you value, what motives are helping and hurting you, and get you fully into alignment so you're driving further and faster and enjoying the ride. Why calories in versus calories burned doesn't always work. This is a What Drives Your Health episode where we look to support your body, which everything you drive is dependent upon. So let's talk about, again, calories in. They just don't always match calories burned in regards to losing weight. I mean, you've likely been in a place of feeling like you're eating clean. You're not eating that much or too much. You're exercising well, but you're still not losing weight or not losing enough weight. You may even be gaining weight. In this episode, we hit on the reality that a calorie is not just a calorie, but even further, certain calories may be fine for one person, not so much for another. The weight loss industry wants to give you a pat answer that everyone can simply follow, and it just doesn't exist. Ultimately, you've got to understand that food and calories are one thing. Your personal makeup is another thing. And you've got to find a nutrition and exercise plan that gives you the results you desire based on your personal makeup. So in this episode, I'm joined by my friend, medical doctor and functional medicine expert, Randy James. And we strive to help you get a grasp on finding your ideal plan, the plan that works for you. You can always find Randy at TrueLifeMedicine.com. Next in, we dig into this issue on calories.
I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky, where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of 7 requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
So I just rode up Mount Hermon Road. Okay. You know where that is?
Yeah, that sounds very boring.
Actually, I rode down it first, and then I rode up it 2,600 feet both ways. So coming back, you know, so going down, not that big a deal. Coming back, you know, it took me...
2,600 feet is not a long ride.
Not a lot. Well, if that was straight up, it was 14 miles.
There you go. 2,600 feet of gain and loss and then gain.
Yeah, yeah. So my thing says I've already burned like 2,700 calories today.
Oh, wait, you just did this?
Today, this morning.
Oh, yeah, because you did it a couple weeks ago, too.
Yeah, I've been doing it every Tuesday.
Oh.
So it says I burned 2,700 calories. I didn't eat breakfast. I had one cup of coffee. I just came in and had some leftover piece of little herring. It was pretty small. And some raw yellow squash. Just that's all I had for leftovers from dinner. And we just had some, what do we have, guac in there and a couple carrots. And I'm munching on a couple chocolate almonds. And that's all I'm going to have time for until dinner. I'll go do dinner. I don't know what we'll have. Probably not something huge. So you would think that I would have like 1% body fat. And you keep getting on me when I refer to this like this, of it's not just calories in and expense. So explain more. Because
yeah,
we're all, I mean, this is the American culture. That's all we know, ultimately, you know, is
calories in, calories out.
Yeah. So if I'm burning all these calories, I'm not eating that much.
Why aren't you 1% I mean,
not
body
like I'm
fat?
Not like I'm sitting here overweight. I mean, I probably, you know, but still.
Well, as we get into it, let's also bring in the overweight. And here I would call us both out as people who in the past, especially in the distant past, not so much recently anymore, but I did grow up with a physician father that never bluntly, but more than overtly intimated that if you're overweight, it's gluttony. Mm-hmm. It is too many calories in and you're sitting on the couch too much. And so my heart goes out to people who are under this burden of weight in America, mm-hmm. especially as women, with an immediate judgment from Kevin Miller and Randy James.
Yeah. So, and I grew up in athletics and endurance sports where, man, I'll never forget. I was racing as an elite cyclist and I decided to go vegan because a friend of mine did. And there were lots of reasons, but I mainly just thought maybe I can cut some weight because here I am. So I was cycling like a Tour de France, you know, type cycling at that time. And, you know, it's strength to weight ratio. I mean, look at the Tour de France just happened this in July. And those guys are sticks with legs and lungs. Anything you got extra upper body or whatever, it's just extra weight you're taking. I remember Greg LeMond at the time talked about climbing the difference of a kilogram or something like that. And so I went vegan and I did. I cut weight and went down to my lowest ever. And the next weekend or in a really soon race, a really mountainous race, I just killed it. I was up there with the pros and it was a huge difference. So outside of judgment, it was performance. And then it went into judgment. Yeah.
So, judgment of thinking about, and you and I had talked about it last week, the almost automatic thought process. If somebody is overweight, to think, that person has too many calories in. They're not moving enough, and so we've been talking about it a while. And as the world is debating about, you know, is it low carb, is it high carb, low fat, is it should we be vegan, should we be plant based, or what about keto, what about paleo, and the confusion that surrounds this. And I appreciate the fact that now having worked, you know, 20 years in a functional medicine style of interface with people and to have many, many, many people on the other side of the table that I know and I trust, and they're not lying. I believe them that they said, I'm not eating too much. It's minimal calories. And I am really exercising to the best of my ability every day. And I've been doing this for name your time, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, a year. And I gained 3 pounds. It's not possible. And I think a lot of people hearing this would say, oh yeah, that's me. That's my wife. That's my mom. That's the people. It's America. And the impetus for our conversation, and even when you told me about Mount Hermon a few weeks ago, is me coming back from Florida and the deep South in America, and there's a higher propensity of overweightness. By the way, on the CDC calendar, Colorado is now the lightest spot on the map again. Like every 5 years, we kind of catch up at the end of the time. But then as the rest of the country gets a little bigger, Colorado is slower. And so if you look at it, we're, you know what I'm saying?
No, like, lighter, what do you mean?
Well, the colors on the map, like if it's deep red, then that's 70% obesity or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And if it's the lighter the color is, and Colorado is the lone state that is maybe we're around 20% or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest of the country is 40, yeah. 50, 60.
Well, and that leads to, just like you did, so you go on a vacation somewhere else. We went to Florida too.
Yeah.
And the kids are like, man, everybody's bigger.
Almost everybody is.
We're not used to seeing, and we're not only in Colorado, we're not even in a big city. We're in a little mountain town, and there's very little obesity, at least, I think.
Yeah, and also, like, I'm noticing in the schools, in young people, there's very little, mm-hmm. And it's still there. It is, and we have patients that are frustrated with that. And so you and I had commented, but I have been reading this book while I'm down there, and I was trying to teach my kids that you and I are built with a likely genetic propensity towards being lean, And like we talk about all the time, if we imbibe and we participate in, you know, dessert food or something like that, we can do that and not gain weight. But at the same time, how can you go and spend 5,000 calories in a day or two or three and eat 3,000 and not lose weight? Like what? Why?
I just went on a getaway 3 days alone.
Imbibing?
Well, I wouldn't eat in the morning. Actually, no, I did imbibe some. I had some little pastries and stuff. I forgot about with my coffee, but not a whole lot. And then went out, and did some epic ride. I mean, I did some incredible rides in Leadville at 10,000 feet and just, huge calorie expenditure. I'd come back, I wouldn't really eat much, and then have a nice dinner and some nice wine and whatnot, but probably not equal, calories to what I burned. I mean, so you're going to hit this, though we also have we have a culture here in America specifically that is increasingly bigger and bigger, more body fat, and is more sedentary. I mean, that exists as well. Amongst this conversation, we have a culture where we no longer have to do anything. We've talked about that before. You do not have to get up off the couch. A lot of people for the past pandemic literally never had to get off the couch. Get out of bed, get your coffee, and on the couch, do your work. You don't have to get your heartbeat above anything to exist.
Can you be a couch potato and be at the right weight?
Sure, though my thought is, you talking about skinny fat doesn't mean you're well, but you can do it and not be over.
Well, can you
significantly
be
overweight? Fit? Well, and then you're discerning what fit is.
Right, how do you define fitness? So the point there is, I think you can be a couch potato and not be as well as you could be, but you can be not overweight and not skinny fat.
Okay.
And you can
be an endurance athlete killing yourself.
And be unwell. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And probably even in the endurance athlete, if we don't go to the competitive side of things, but these guys that run one marathon a year, the plodders, the trudgers or whatever else, you can also be those guys and be skinny fat.
Yeah.
Okay. And then flip it around and go down the other side of in Kevin Miller's body right here, is most of your calorie expenditure Mount Hermon or other things?
Well, to the accurateness of my wearable device, it does separate out active and
passive calories.
Yeah.
Burned.
Yeah. So it'll give me like a daily, I'm actually pulling it up here. If I look at calories, here it's going to show active calories. So that's what it tracks.
Well, resting up here, resting in calories. Yeah.
Well, if I look today, so I've got six. Is this today? Yeah. 1,615 active calories. A little less than that.
Right. Well, you did 14 miles.
It was actually 28 miles down the mountain.
Oh, down and up, back
down
up.
Down so and back up.
But how many hours?
If you total it up, two hours.
2 hours of you riding at Kevin Miller pace.
It was a pretty fast pace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you look at that, you almost, in all your sit on your duff time, have burned almost as many calories as you did during that 2 hours of high put out.
Well, by the end of the day, it may be close to
your passive calories.
Yeah.
So
just the calories to exist.
Well, go back one swipe there.
Yeah.
And look, there's way more passive calories than.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I didn't even notice
way
that.
More.
Way more.
And you're like one of the top 5% of active guys.
I probably average at this right now about an hour a day of.
Let's put you in the top 1%.
I'm running, I'm riding.
But look, how many passive resting calories? And for people who can't see that, it's 80%, 75%.
I've never paid attention to that. Okay, I'm tracking.
Okay, so where are all those calories going? Like, what is burning calories?
I know, because otherwise, if I'm not doing that, I am sitting on my butt.
Both of us are. We're talking to people and we're on the phone and we're on the computer.
Like the 10,000 steps, is supposed to be healthy or whatever.
On a passive day, how many steps are you getting on a non-exercise day?
3,000 to 5,000.
Yeah. I'd say I'm about 4,000 to 5,000.
Okay. I had a day the other day, it was 3,000. I rode, it didn't have that, but steps wise outside of me actively exercising, I'm doing nothing.
Yeah. Really. And I typically try to catch up on the weekend and, Thursday, Fridays are less days. So I'll have lots of steps on those days and 3,000 steps on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
But I'm burning the same amount of calories, pretty close. Okay, so all of this is to go into in the context of obesity, in the context of weight, in the context of almost everybody out there growing up in the culture of calories in equals calories out, of the machine-based problem. Even the word calorie, where does calorie come from? It's a physics. It came from your physics or chemistry class. How much energy does it take to take 1 gram of water from 1 Celsius degree upwards, or I've forgotten the exact definition, but it's basically heat energy.
Okay.
And does the body work that way? And the answer is no, it does not.
Because I think so. Your stomach's a little oven, and you stick a Big Mac in there, and it's whatever it is, 2,000 something. It's some amount of stuff.
Stuff.
And if I don't... If my body is not working to burn enough of that stuff,
it gets packed onto your rear.
Stuck to my butt and my gut and my, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's how people think.
Yeah.
And it's just backwards.
People like me.
Because I came back from Florida and we had this little, you know.
That's why we're talking about it.
That's why we're talking about it, because I have to tell everybody. Because we came back from Florida and I was trying to teach my kids that, okay, look, you don't get to sit there and judge that person who is clearly overweight. The reality is, and I'm speaking to all of the people, and it's not me and you, or you, we have never been overweight. And there is a burden, an emotional, immediate judgment on these people that they now subconsciously have on themselves. And the impact of that, and you know the people that we know in our community that are under this burden.
Well, and it's a nation of shame. And I want to say that it's been a part of my home as well. My kids, you know, look at it, and I have probably done some healthy and unhealthy perspectives with this, with my kids because of this. And of course, now we have the trying to normalize being overweight.
Right, so our culture is now saying, hey, it just is what it is. Let's accept it.
What's it called? Positive body image or mm-hmm. whatever. And let's do that, which you would think it all sounds good, but then we do have some proponents like Jillian Michaels was called out. So she's the famous fitness expert. And they were doing that with some actress or something that was really, you know, pretty significantly obese, and she did some positive thing. And Jillian said, okay, you know, all power to her, though I'm not going to condone the level of unshape that she's in, because she is a higher risk for everything. Diabetes, heart disease, whatever. So if I was her insurance company, I'll be all positive. Don't.
And this is where it gets all twisty. Is because we grew up with that idea. And right along with that is the subconscious will, you know, pat myself on the back because I'm not overweight. But the reality is, if whoever that actress is, over the past 20 years, whenever she started to become overweight, let's say back when we were 12, and she ate the exact, like we've talked about it before, I woke up and I ate Cheerios. Yeah. And I went to lunch with white bread, peanut butter, and jelly sandwich. I came home and I had chips and a ding dong. And I sat down to a meal of meatloaf and green beans and a dinner roll and my mom making me do a glass of milk. High carb all the way through. She gained weight and I didn't. And then it started the process. And in her, it's 5 more pounds a year, 5 to 10 more a year. And you throw for women, you throw a baby in there and a 50-pound weight gain and maybe a, you know, 20-pound weight loss after that. And it just compounds. Okay. So this, what we're aiming at is, you know, this battle on the high carb, low fat emphasis, or a low carb, high fat emphasis. And you know, the controversy that was Atkins back in the '70s. And I remember Atkins started going out around the late '90s, and I was becoming a doc then. And I remember, you know, I'm counseling patients now saying, there's no data for that. It's kind of tried to, I mean, really, McDonald's, bacon and eggs, everywhere. I mean, come on, right? Like just, this is stupid. And yet the data was there, people lost weight, and even still today, now 20 years later, will it raise your LDL, and if it your bad cholesterol, and it freaks out the docs? Does it increase the chance that you're going to die of a heart attack or stroke? And here's the ultimate answer: we don't know.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com. When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet, it's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a five-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their five-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer.
Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Kevin.
Well, you just mentioned Atkins, and you're talking about it. Define that for somebody who doesn't feel familiar.
Let's just say that, to oversimplify things, we're going to say the low fat emphasis, which means high carb. And even those people would say high good carbs.
Okay.
Dean Ornish and Pritikin, and there's lots of people down that pathway. And over here is the high fat, low carb, which Whole 30, South Beach, Paleo is all kind of that ilk over here. Atkins began that.
Right. Yeah, because he came out with a big contrarian approach of go eat your meat and cheese and have all you want.
The Atkins, that revolution, he called it.
Okay.
And so now that I have worked with people and have been on both sides of, I recognize, in fact, my friend, the doctor I was just telling you about, in my early in med, so I was 30. And I didn't really change my way of eating until about 25 to be conscientious of it.
Yeah.
And he is not like us, right? So he is born big, so to speak. And we would call that an endomorph, people that are, in our culture, your daughter is going to be one of those, Jadaria, that her genetics and her way is to see a calorie, a carbohydrate, and her body is not built she is built differently, and she is going to not burn it once she gets into insulin resistance and all that kind of stuff. And so my friend, and one day I kind of said something, because he was always struggling with weight. And he's like, oh, what? Like, yeah, I really see you work out a lot and change the way you eat. Because we ate the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, he's right. I eat more than him and we eat the same thing. And I felt...
Well, I'd say that about you and me. I exercise so much more than you. And my experience is you eat more than I do. You eat more sweets than I do. And you don't have an ounce of fat on you.
And I get credit for that. As much as people get shame for being overweight, I get credit. Undue. Yeah. And
except for the old lady who was in here and said, Dr. James, he needs to eat some cake or a sandwich or something.
Feed that boy.
Classic line.
And so I've been struggling with this and how to also relate to people who are in that overweight world, trusted friends that are patients that say, I'm really doing it and I believe them. And so now we can say it is not calories in, calories out. It is not a physics equation. It is in the same way a calorie is not a calorie is a calorie. You can't eat, 50 calories of spinach and compare it to 50 calories of a Snickers bar, right? Your body is going to interpret these things in way different ways. So what is the difference in the interpretation? And I would submit in the debate, right? Like, because there is a debate, and that we technically, every unique individual is going to be unique. But I would ask people to agree that we are likely overcarbed as a culture, as a people, over simple carbed, empty calories. Mm-hmm. We drink these calories, juice or whatever.
Gosh. Can you keep your train of thought? Because I just want to, we had a guy who we won't mention who became a patient, really smart guy, really rich guy, just top of the heap, white American, 6 foot male, whatever. I mean, everything. And he thought he was eating healthy. And I went to and spent some time with him, and the amount of sugar he drank in his, all natural fruit and even veggie.
His naked juice or even green drinks in the morning.
And I'm turning around looking at the sugar content. He just had more in one sitting than I have sugar content in a week.
And he mainlined it, right? Like it's not wrapped up around fiber but we grew up with, before OJ did his thing.
Just to finish that, he was also having significant health problems.
Is he the one that said, I'll just take the statin and.
No.
Okay.
It's
Yeah. Significant health problems. Yeah. And I would, if we go back to your little oven in the stomach, burning things, that insulin and glucose. Here's how I've shifted my way of thinking. Okay. Even as I'm going to challenge.
Because I interrupted you, because you're saying, so you take in your. You're set. We're too overcarbed, simple carb.
Right. Yeah. Okay. If we agree, we're overcarbed and we are under vegetables, good vegetables, in general.
That I see on just about any diet out there or anybody trying to follow one is there still vegetables are so small. And, Mark Hyman right now is the main proponent of saying your plate should be half vegetable. I struggle to maintain that. I think you do better than I do.
I struggle to maintain it in my family. My family won't.
Yeah.
So we still have rice a lot and potatoes or sweet potatoes and things like that. So instead of it being, a piece of chicken and then two veggies, it's a piece of chicken and a whole bunch of Brussels sprouts and some rice. would be a sort of a typical kind of thing.
Us too. Yeah.
Okay. But if somebody is built and gosh, I need to get better in the way that I say this.
I know. I'm interested. I'm watching you choose your words. So okay. I've never seen you try to
struggle.
Well, because it's such a, back to judgment, such a volatile, such an unfair is what I think you're saying.
Okay. That's it. I'm so sorry that it's kind of like we live in this world and I'm so sorry there's forest fires and it's smoky outside and there is not a thing right now that we can do about it.
Yeah.
And somebody is out there and they're already 10, 20, 40, 100 pounds overweight. And right now that will not change. But if you switch the way of thinking and if the people around you can switch their way of thinking to say, okay, there are those among us that fatten easily, okay, that the same food type equals this bodily response. And the way that the body is going to process energy, because that's what we're talking about, is from the food, and so if we boil it right down, how many ATP can you get from a carbohydrate calorie versus a fat calorie, and you get more from fat, and that's kind of been the thought is, well, you still eat a little bit of fat, and it just sticks right on you, and your little oven in your tummy, and it's not burning things up quite so fast, and. But here's the thing. If people that are of that kind of body type, if they get any carb, meaning even in the vegetables or carrots or tubers or roots or those kind of things, or beans or legumes, all or even the most organicest, steelest, cuttest oats.
It feels like just about everything but meat, dairy, I guess. I mean, there's...
And a few, you know, seeds, nuts, olive oil, okay, right, a coconut, avocados, and it is really hard. I think, and I'm aiming to a challenge for me and you.
No carbs at all.
I'm gonna call you out on a trial of a.
Yeah, it just seems so anti-health to say I'm not gonna have vegetables.
No, you are gonna have vegetables, but we're gonna prove ketosis.
Okay.
Because you did a ketogenic effort, but I don't think you ever proved that you were in.
Okay.
And so I don't think here's why I would do that for me. And I think you would have a different one because I know I still have a joint inflammation issue and a skin issue. We talk about our skin. Yeah. Like I always say, I've got old man legs or whatever like this. Why? You know, and why would I feel stiff? And yeah. You know, I'm 53, and so the rest of the world would say, well, you're 53. And but I still think, or I wonder, down the energy partitioning, like how is your body taking the energy from a fat and from a carb and from, and so, you know, the ones who easily fatten, they might be the ones who, if they get any carb from any good vegetable, their body so preferentially pulls that, and because they're not built to pull it from the fat, so to speak, not getting into the nuts and bolts of biochemistry, that it just stays that way. And then we tell these people to eat even less. So they go from a 1,200 calorie day down to 800 calorie day of a low fat diet. And essentially, they eat that food and immediately are hungry, even though they've got, you know, weeks worth of calories in their gut or butt or hip or fat. We all do. Even the skinniest marathon runner out there has weeks of calories to burn. Now, not if he's running 20 miles a day, obviously, but if he stopped eating, he's not, a 1% body fat person still has 10 pounds of fat on him.
Yeah.
Okay. So that I just want people to, it doesn't mean that we can write a book and say everybody needs to be keto. Now, I would say in America, the 99.99% of us are likely overcarbed, we are under low carb veggie, meaning the Brussels sprouts and cabbage and what I kind of call real veggies, you know, spinach, cabbage, kale. Like my kids will eat carrots all day long because they're darn sweet, right? Like that's the sweetest.
My favorite is sugar snap peas.
It's like it's practically candy. And here's the thing, down the inflammatory pathway, and maybe you in the skin thing or the gut thing or things like that, is this. in America, we have gotten stuck in this energy, you know, calories in, calories out, and it's what you're burning. And so you wake up in the morning and you pull up to the gas station, and you fill your car up, and it's, you know, really healthy, low fat yogurt with some orange juice and some granola and some banana slices on there with low fat milk. Like that's the traditional healthy breakfast. Yeah. And it fills up your tank. Depending upon the kind of car you have, you know, is that gas quickly siphoned up and, but you don't spend it. Now, remember, you can't, none of us can go run 20 miles a day to burn those calories. So you go and sit there, and some people don't have an efficient burning system, if you will. So it gets immediately flopped over into storage form, which is fat. And then conversely, because they're not built to burn the fat very well, they're empty and they have a hunger signal. And we're telling them, no, be hungry and eat less and don't have that mid-afternoon snack. But we all grew up on a mid-afternoon snack, right? So the patterning is still there. And so we go up to the gas station thing again, and we fill up our tank, but there's already all of this energy in there. And so then the body is, but we say, well, we bought the food and we're kind of empty, so we're going to eat it anyway. And it's the equivalent of in your car, you roll down the window and you just put the, well, let's just stick it here in the back seat. And in our car, we would think, oh my gosh, that's so toxic. It stinks. It's flammable. It gets on my clothes. It's around me all day long. And I would say, that's exactly what's going on in the body with superfluous insulin and glucose floating around. Insulin and glucose are inflammatory. They're toxic, not toxic. In excess, they're toxic. But I'm arguing anything is excess that isn't getting used efficiently right now. And we all have days of fat storage around us. And so we're back to, well, should we fast? Yes. That's one of the things to do. And one of the other things to do is, okay, well, quit stimulating insulin glucose production. And use up the other things. Any extra, and why are my joints inflamed? Well, if I'm spraying, you know, extra glucose particles around, they're inflammatory. Same with insulin. And that's great in the carburetor of your engine, where when you spark it, it lights a fire and goes away. And so our glucose and our insulin should be as low as possible all the time. And after you eat, it should get back down to normal quickly. We don't live in a country where that's happening. We live in a country where our glucose levels are too high, our insulin levels are too, we're not even talking about diabetes, right? But that's where everybody's headed. That's where the big markers are. I'm like, that's the end game. That's the end stage. What about those of us that are, we're all, if you're not diabetic, you're pre-diabetic, we're all on the spectrum of everything all the time. And in you, it's not going to become diabetes, but what if that inflammation goes over into the skin or into visceral adiposity? And in me, it's over into the joints. And the other thing that's kind of bugging me is mental clarity and that sense of creativity, brain fog. And
I'm thinking even just resilience, just mental resilience.
Yes. Yeah. The ability to sit by myself alone in a room for 15 minutes.
Yeah. To be at peace regardless of the circumstances, to be able to harness that. Yeah.
And now we're not saying that, okay, the reason somebody's got depression, anxiety, or not at peace is too much insulin glucose. But what we are saying is it's a factor, and we live in this hyper carbohydrate world. So what's a body to do? Is it right or wrong to be, you know, plant-based? And this recent book I read, he even, you know, takes aim at Michael Pollan, eat plant, eat food. But then he says mostly plants. Uh-huh. Not too much. Yeah. Be hungry. Don't be satisfied. Don't be full. Don't eat too much.
And the other thing, too, that we should mention, because we did a show on it with Angelo Poli, is metabolism, is the people who keep cutting back. And can that cause your body to try to adapt and say, gosh, we're not getting much calories?
We're over here
can
in starvation
slow
mode.
Down, and that seems relevant to some people as well. So that's another issue on the just depletion of food side.
Well, in the fasting side, just don't eat, right? If you eat less carbs, you're not letting the reset button hit, so to speak. you're not, and the recent analogy I've been using is that we are all built with this extremely complex engine of taking food and creating energy, ATP, right? So very complex biochemistry stuff going on. We don't all have to get it from straight up glucose, right? We could just eat straight up glucose, but we need all of these other things. And we also need to be able to withstand famine and be able to make it throughout the day without eating.
Yeah.
Theoretically, right?
Theoretically,
the last 10,000 years. That's right. 10,000 years, that was very true. The last 100 years, very not true.
And the weird thing is you're saying that too. So here we are with arguably more fat on us. Well, not arguably, but it's realistically.
Yeah.
So more fat on us, which you would think would equate to more energy. Gosh, we got more there.
Yeah.
And we're at an all-time high of people claiming
chronic fatigue,
low energy.
Low energy.
Yeah. And so you're going to go, in with this, all this extra stuff that you're not accessing and go get a Red Bull.
That's right.
I mean, and that is,
and it just keeps
you keep talking about the gas station, because that's what I thought. The gas station is, hey, when you need a pick-me-up, when you need that extra energy, when you need that whatever. And I'm just, you know, I'm aware that my best athletic performance and my best mental clarity comes with no food.
Yeah.
It's completely
And you should polarized. Be pretty close to no food an hour after you ate. Right? Meaning some people, especially if they're, you know, insulin resistance and all that kind of stuff, they will be high glucose for a long period of time, longer period of time. And if your body is built to get fuel to eat and then go and spend most of its time unfed, in the unfed state, and resilient and stable. And so the analogy I've been using is in this complex body where food comes in to equal whatever we call ATP and energy in terms of mood and creativity and brain fog and a muscle contraction is a complex set of engines within us. So let's just simplify it and go back to a car analogy. And it's kind of like in America, we drive these gas cars. And if I'm driving from Denver to Kansas City, straight shot, right? But I got to stop and fuel up every 3-4 hours or whatever.
Just like a good American does.
That's what we do all day long. Stop at the gas station and fuel up and burn that and off we go. But the body is not like a car, and it's built for days of you still got to make it to Kansas City, still got to perform. And so there is the gasoline burning car engine within you physiologically, but there's also the diesel. And so most Americans are operating only on the gas side. They just keep fuel, and the body is built to preferentially use the glucose. If it's there, it'll use it.
Which probably goes back to the, you know, theories on survival. We were built for that. We need that, you know, quick hit to survive and run away from the saber-toothed tiger and whatever. So our body's going to be adapted to grabbing the quick energy. Is that fair?
I don't know. So everything about paleo is conjecture.
Yeah. Okay.
But what we do know metabolically is if there is glucose, quick fuel, your body will use that, because glucose gets in the body, insulin goes up, that shuts down any access you have to the fat. Insulin as a hormone shuts down any access you have to the fat. So as you stimulate insulin, your body cannot use the diesel fuel, will not.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
And this is where the controversy starts to come in, like on the...
I know, because then you just want to say, so everybody should just do keto. Hardcore. And intermittent fasting and fasting.
Well, yes, you do kind of wind up going down that pathway, but for the fact that I am not overweight and have been on a carb-based diet for 50 years. So there's got to be some space of allowance there for the mystery of we cannot explain this in everybody all the time. And science people and nutritionists hate to say that. They hate to say we don't know.
Okay, well, but is it fair to say that we all, in especially here in America, we're all mutts, and we come from, you know, that's why everybody loves the 23andMe and Ancestry, yeah, or whatever. Figure out I'm, you know, half, or I'm one third Eskimo, and I'm one third Greek, okay, and I'm fair, whatever. And so let's go to the Eskimo. So if you got an ancestry that lived on meat and whale blubber and adapted to that, that should have some causations in your personal.
Agreed. And in America, unique to any other consistent time over the course of history, we probably are, yeah, mutts, mixed up much more so than in the past, where you ate what you had.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what everybody did, right? So you ate what you had, and there was adaptation, and life didn't change very much. You know, we're watching that movie, The Chosen, and they'll go backwards 2,000 years, and it's the same camels and the same sheep and the same clothes and the same tents and the same whatever as 2,000 years later. But my goodness, we're seeing changes in food and technology. And
I was going to say, so if we go back, you know, two generations for all of us, two, you know, even if we go to three generations.
There was no such thing as high fructose corn syrup.
Well, I was going to say, so if you take that three generations and then go back to the dawn of time, whenever you believe that may be, that you probably came from certain segments of people that had the same stuff for a billion years, and their bodies adapted that. Now we come here, and those people from different, completely different environments and intake come together,
get all mixed up,
have a baby, and then you're trying to say,
have a baby in a culture where the norm is now overcarbed, underslept, overstressed, undernutritioned, blah, 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 all the things we talk about,
yeah,
equals what we see in America with $5 trillion bills of chronic disease and chronic frustration and 70% overweightness, 40% obesity, and probably 20%, 25% metabolic syndrome. When you put these things together, when you have, if your waist goes past your belt, right, basically, blood pressure, insulin resistance, and I'm forgetting the other things, low HDLs, and high triglycerides, that constellation equals a dramatic increase in risk down the inflammatory pathway, especially diabetes, cardiovascular disease. And it makes sense. So what's a person to do? And right, and we want to say, all right, everybody needs to be keto, or everybody needs to do this thing. And so,
which in the marketplace, I mean, that's what sells.
You
cannot, a publisher is not going to publish a book that says, you know, what should you eat? We don't freaking know.
We don't freaking know.
Here's some ideas. Go try.
One out of 7 billion, you know, if here's 7 billion different diets, you're going to find the right one for you. Yeah. Right? Like everybody's got the, and we would say, no, that there are infrastructural, movable, dynamic pillars of truth within this.
I was just going to say, there are tenets.
Tenets.
There's going to be no place where we're going to come and go, you know what? The processed diet, it's a good choice.
Agreed.
We're never going to come.
Never going to say eat gas station food.
Eat gas station. Yeah. If it, well, back to Michael Pollan, who you mentioned,
if it comes through a drive-through window or whatever, but he calls them food-like substances,
meaning the FDA approved it and it can sit on a shelf forever and it won't kill you immediately. At least FDA gets a stamp and you can theoretically eat it. But to go over here to whole pure foods, we're talking about foods that are not going to last more than a couple of days. Hopefully your meats, your vegetables, you said nuts and seeds. Some of those will last a while, but I hope everybody who's listening gets the point of that.
Yeah, I think every single diet will say get rid of processed food. Yeah. Fair?
Well, except the ones that the pre-made, you know, eat Jenny Craig or whatever.
Yeah.
They'll use some processed stuff. But.
Well, I think even in the keto paleo world now, you know, the industry steps in and says, here's Halo Top ice cream. Here's a keto-friendly bar. I mean, they're just going to make the same repeat the same mistakes of making it too fast, too accessible, too whatever. Nobody's spending enough time empty. Nobody's having to work for their food, and it becomes another version of processed. So anybody stepping off the standard American diet into a non-processed vegetarian, vegan, or keto paleo is going to do better, probably. But we're talking about the people who have already been on diet after diet. and they're really feeling stuck. Like, okay, we don't know the story of those people who are overweight in, you know, whatever state we're in. And I've worked with plenty of them that say, I know I am not doing that. And I say, I believe you. I absolutely believe you. Why is your body not flipping over to the diesel burning side of things? Do you, and kind of last year we went on a lot of fasting emphasis. And
yeah, back to your example, which is good. If I didn't exercise the amount that I did and ate what you do, and we just sat next to each other and worked at our desks all day, I'd be 50 pounds heavier.
Maybe. And I would say it like this. It's more likely that you would gain more weight faster than I would.
Yeah. And somebody else would even more.
Somebody else even more and somebody else even less.
Yeah.
Right. So what do we do? And so I'm going to go to me and you, because we don't have weight loss as a, you might say you have weight distribution as a goal. I would focus on skin and joints, brain, maybe sleep. And last year, over the past couple of years, we've been experimenting with fasting. And what I would challenge us with is, and I would challenge most people out there with, you know, try it. For sure, getting off, if you're a standard American diet, eating fast food, if you're stressed out and all that.
Which for those listening, if you go down, I don't know, I don't have it in front of me, but we've done a show or more on fasting, talking about intermittent fasting, talked about prolonged fasting, which in my vernacular, 3 days or more, or whatever is prolonged. So yeah, you can go listen to that.
Is it good for you? Yes. There's a few times when we'd say don't do it, but for most people, speaking to the averagely mostly well.
Lately, I've been thinking about it. Like, sometimes you just got to shut your phone and computer down. You can't just jerry-rig them anymore. They're just not working. Just shut it down. We all know that. Just shut it down. That's fasting. Every once in a while, just give my body a break, which I have not. I can't remember the last. It's been a while after the hardcore 3 days every week, and now I've... It's been a while.
It's been a while for
lots
me too.
Lots of intermittent.
I was going to say every day.
Well,
go at least 15 or whatever hours, and I like that. So the challenge to me and you and to people who have not yet tried this would be to say, okay, give your body a chance at ketosis. I think all human beings ought to give their, it doesn't mean you're on a keto diet insofar as you have to go down a certain dietary strategy or eat only meat and fat and whatever else. You can do this plant-based. It's harder. But for me and you, I would say, and here's the way I would do it for people that are looking for significant weight loss or inflammation management, would be to be aware of the carbs and the tricky ones. Right, so the non-tricky ones are certainly candy bars and juices, and you know, certainly don't drink your carbohydrates or drink your calories.
To simplify, look at the sugar content.
Look at the sugar
which
content.
We can do that vegetable to vegetable, like you said, snap peas and broccoli.
Carrots and compare. Yeah, so the quote unquote real vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts and asparagus and things like that. But tricky ones might be green beans, which are a close cousin to snap peas and legumes and lentils, and we're not saying those are bad foods. We're just saying fast from them for a while. Get yourself under 20 or 30 grams carbs. Americans then make the mistakes of they shift to mostly meat and nuts. And if your machine, so back to that car, if you stop putting carbs in there, but you put a lot of protein in, it'll turn it right into carbs. It'll just flop it right over, and you still don't use the diesel engine over there. And most Americans might also say, oh, I don't feel good when I do that. And it's kind of like, well, that diesel engine is stuck and sputtery and cobwebby and hasn't run in a while, and it's going to take. But I would say if you give it a couple of weeks and you are gentle with yourself and down that famous keto flu kind of a pathway, the metabolic reality of that is known. And it's kind of like if you stop caffeine, you're going to have to go through the caffeine withdrawals and headaches. It's just, sure, take a Tylenol or whatever, but it'll be gone in a while. The water weight problem. And when going through fasting, remember, I got, you know, ankle edema and stuff like that. So I think I would be the one that would need to eat a lot of salt, take a lot of extra magnesium to help my body down through that shifting kind of a pathway. And then under 20 or 30 grams of carb, under your body weight in kilograms. So you and I would both be 70-80 grams of protein, right? So that's two medium-sized helpings of fish, one for lunch, one for dinner, so we're probably okay. And then knock yourself out on whatever's fat. So coconut, avocado, nut butter, oils. Nuts you have to be careful of because of proteins. And then the kicker is measure your ketones. So you can buy the ketone urine strips and, you know, and but then do it three or four times a day. So you got in there, but you never kept yourself there, nor have I. And then the question at the end of 30 days is, does Kevin Miller's body respond to, because people on the keto style will often do lots of berries. Maybe that knocks you out for 2 days and knocks me out for 2 hours. So I could then eat more berries and be in ketosis than compared to you. But if it knocks you out for 2 days, then don't do berries, right? And it does become a limited kind of thing. And then stay in ketosis, I would say at least 30 days, but 90 days. And so my hope, I didn't want to do it in the summertime because of watermelon.
Yeah.
Watermelon and cantaloupe. But here we are, school's getting ready to start, September, October, November, to try to get into ketosis, stay there, reassess joint, skin, brain fog, sleep. And I feel like I have to do it because I'm counseling patients to try this. And so I just need to, and for you and I, you know, throw in a couple of fasting times in there and stuff like that and see what happens.
All right. So it's not a calorie in and how much you burn. It's not that simple. Hopefully this was helpful.
And I'm so sorry for all the people that I've ever judged with that thought. And at the same time, that doesn't condone the state of being overweight. You will feel better and live longer and weller if you're lean.
Yeah.
But you just got to try a different way. And I would encourage people to, and I'll mention the name of the book. I think it's worth mentioning the Case for Keto by Gary Tobbs. I think he does a fair job. Obviously he's pro keto, but handling both sides of the issue and just scratching our heads on the unique human individuality. But in America, we are, again, overcarbed, undervegetabled, under good fatted. And then, of course, obviously, yes, talk to your doctor and pay attention to the LDL levels and those kind of things. But I think it's worth a trial that every human ought to go through of give your body a chance at prolonged ketosis, not forever, but, you know, 2-3 months and then reassess.
Well, when we do that, we should talk about it on here.
That's a great idea.
So some folks want to do it with us.
November. So, yeah, at the end of November, we have a results. That's a lot of pressure.
All right.
All right, friends, thanks for joining us on this journey. I hope this gave some light on this issue around calories that can help you find and adjust what you're doing to get the results that you want. Again, you can always find Randy James, Dr. Randy James at TrueLifeMedicine.com. You can always join us to discuss these issues further at the Drive Tribe at KevinMiller.co. And until next time, I hope this episode helped you drive further and enjoy the ride.
Thanks so much for joining me on this journey. I look forward to meeting you in the Drive Tribe community for ongoing discussions about each episode. You can subscribe to the Drive Drop newsletter for weekly updates. Find it all at kevinmiller.co, along with all our social media and video clips. Until next time, I hope this episode helps you drive further and enjoy the ride.